welcome, welcome, welcome to the latest edition of the Sevillistas Worldwide Podcast, where we talk about Sevilla FC and all things Sevilla FC. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about in this episode. We haven't been around for about a month now, so nothing's happened. Just a few little small things here and there. But anyway, we'll get right into it. First up, I'm Chris Lill, down in kind of Virginia area, Manassas, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. I've got my friends, Eddie, up in Toronto, Canada. Eddie, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Happy Canadian Thanksgiving to everybody out there.
That's today?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. Wow.
Oh, happy we could have been celebrating.
Yeah. We had our own thing yesterday, like our...
Really?
Well, I don't even know what holiday was yesterday. Indigenous Peoples Day or Columbus Day or... Oh. I really don't know. Steve, do you know what it was?
It was Columbus Day / Indigenous Peoples Day.
I hope you guys celebrated... What do you guys have, like beaver or... I made that joke last year, I think.
Yo, that's a wild, man. It was moose. Well, come on, man.
Moose. You have moose? Is that what you have?
Moose and maple syrup, yeah.
Just, yeah, turkey, you have, like, all that good stuff, you know, stuffing. And...
Turkey stuffed with, like, Canadian bacon.
Dog.
Like a little round piece. Some poutine to go on the side.
Man, I'm still African, man. Like, yeah. All right.
I don't know. Just had
but, yeah,
to
traditional Thanksgiving stuff, man.
Nice. Steve, up in Minnesota, my friend, how are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Even better now that we're back together after this long break.
Yeah, it's been so long that, you know, I see you guys have, you got, Eddie's got the turtleneck on, you got the hoodie and the beanie. Like,
it's cold, man.
It's cold now, man.
It's getting real, huh? It's getting real now.
You got leaves in the ground, and it's getting cold.
Up in Minnesota, I can't imagine. Ugh. No snow yet, though.
No, not yet.
Not yet. It's coming. I'm sure. Coming up. So, guys, we hadn't talked in a while. We are a Sevilla FC podcast, and that's what we're going to talk about. And we got a lot to talk about. So, let's get right to it. Last time we talked was, way back in the Girona game was kind of the last game we talked about. So, a lot's happened. 7 matches total. The team's been busy. Not only playing matches, but... I guess the front office got bored, too, and wanted to jingle some things around. So we'll get into that just a little bit later. But let's walk through some of the results and the matches that we missed since we talked last. And the first one up that came right after, it was the day after we recorded last, and that was the Sevilla-Las Palmas game, where Sevilla actually won. Luca Bacchio got his first goal for Sevilla in that match. And... It was a nice one. There was an accomplished cross, a really pretty cross to Nesri, and the keeper kind of parried it out to Luca Bacchio, and he just nailed it right into the back. He was in a perfect position. It was nice to see somebody on the left-hand side being in a kind of a poacher role right there, just ready to tap it in. So something we haven't seen. Total of 9 shots on target for Sevilla in that match. Las Palmas only had 2. Pretty much a domination. The interesting thing in that game was Las Palmas did have 57% of the possession, which they didn't do much with it. 14 shots, 2 on target. Sevilla pretty much controlled it. Got the late goal, though, 71st minute from Luca Bacchio to get Sevilla's... That was their first win, right, guys? I believe in the season? I think that was the first win of the season.
Yeah, we've only had 2, and that was the first, yeah.
Yeah, jeez, man. What a way to start. Then right after that, we had the first Champions League game of the year with Linz. It was a 1-1 draw. And Sevilla got up early on that one. Ocampos with the wonder header from a Rakitic corner. Kind of flicked it back in the back post. Rakitic found Ocampos there on the near post. And Ocampos just kind of like headed it back, and I don't know about you guys. I didn't think it was a goal. Like, I was like, what? What happened? Like, it was just so weird. It was a very strange one. Kind of reminded me of that. There was a goal last year, kind of very similar by Bade, I think. You remember that one? Where it kind of looped into the back of the net?
Oh, yeah.
Man United?
Oh, Yeah, that was Man United.
Yeah, it was a Man United game, I think. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
The second goal,
this
is
strange. Yeah, kind of the same
at
kind
at
of...
The Sanchez Pizjuan. At the Pizjuan, right? Yeah.
Yep. So, Sevilla, Campo was got on the board. That was the ninth minute that we got up, and then free kick by... How now you say that guy's name? Fulgini, probably, I guess. In the 21st or 24th minute, tied it up. Sevilla, five shots on target. Linz had three. Pretty even affair. Nothing really happened much after that. It was kind of a boring match, which I guess you want. But, that was our first home game in the Champions League. It'd been nice to come home with a win from that. But couldn't pull it off. Next up, we had the very boring 0-0 goose egg trip up to Osasuna. Boring affair there. Three shots on target for Sevilla, two on target for Osasuna. Nothing of note on that game. I don't even remember, it was such a blur. I don't remember anything, of that match. I don't know about you guys, if you do or not, but... 0-0, who cares, right?
It was forgettable.
nothing happened. But what wasn't forgettable was the next match on our agenda here, and that was the 5-1 victory, Sevilla beating Almeria at the Pichuan. Goals from Youssef En-Nesyri in the 7th, Luca Bacchio right after that in the 8th, Suso in the 38th, Lamella getting on the board in the 51st, and then Kiki Salas bringing it home in the 90+2 with a really cool strike into the left-hand side there. Just unbelievable. I missed that game live. I didn't get to see it live. I was driving back from North Carolina, so I totally missed that one. Watching, Kristen was like, hey, do you want to know the score as I was driving? And I was like, or do you want to listen to the game? And I was like, we'll watch it when we get home. But then she, it just started popping up. Bam, 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 go, go, go. And I was like, what's happening? So I got all the goals and then watched the highlights when I got back. I didn't watch the full game. But En-Nesyri, that was a cool one. Bade hit it off the crossbar. En-Nesyri was right there to hit it in. That was from a Suso corner, by the way. That was in the 7th minute, and then Luca Bacchio right after that with a golazo, where he dribbled around four defenders and then just lasered it up in the top left corner. And I was asking Eddie before the show here, when's the last time a goal like that happened for Sevilla, that individualistic effort happened for Sevilla, and I couldn't remember. It's been so long, but just what a player this guy's turning out to be for us, right? Definitely the signing of the season so far, and maybe for the last, I don't know. We'll see. It's still early. But he looks promising. I'm hoping we're not going to overuse him because he's playing a ton of minutes right now, and he should. He's really, really good. Good player. That was his second goal for Sevilla this year already. Suso got on the board on the 38th with that patented left-hand or left-footed shot coming across the middle.
You saw it coming, didn't you?
Right? Everybody should know. That's what he's going to do. What are you doing, guy? But Lamella gets on the board. His second of the year, I think. Second of the year, 51st minute. Pedroso with the assist on that one. It was a low-driving cross. Lamella just tapped it right under the defender's legs and maybe the keeper's legs too. I can't remember, but just a pinpointed ball. We saw a lot of goals that we haven't seen often with this team, where we had a lot of players in the box and things flying around. And Luca Bacchio had another one too that should have been a goal. The ref waved it off. I don't know if VAR intervened or if the ref... No, the ref just called him as a foul. Him and another player tangling. The defender had his shirt. Luca Bacchio kind of had his arm around the guy's head a little bit, but it was two guys fighting for the ball. Luca Bacchio sprinted, scored, but called back for a foul. I thought that was really, really poor. I didn't think it was a foul, but whatever. Didn't count. And then Salas got that the final goal there in the 92nd, I think it was. Just really, really well-struck ball. And then there was a penalty in that game, which was probably worse than the foul on the Luka Bakio. Novice with this phantom like foul on I forgot who it was in the box, right? It might have been. I can't remember. 71st minute, Luis Suarez gets the ball at the spot and scores from the penalty spot. To take away the clean sheet, we would have had a clean sheet probably from that. They had one shot on target the whole game, Almeria. Who's in a world of hurt, I think, sitting down in last place in La Liga. And Sevilla, really only 9 shots on target that game, scoring 5 of them. 18 total shots overall. So, crazy performance on that one. I hate I missed it live because I'm sure that was a lot of fun to watch. And we haven't had a lot of those games recently. Next up, Barcelona game. Played pretty well. Back and forth. Both teams had some chances, right? From what I remember. Juan Felix for them hit the bottom side of the post. Looked like it bounced in, but didn't. And then we hit the post a couple times. And Rakitic, I think, made Ter Stegen make a really great save. And a lot of back and forth. Only 3 shots on target in that match for us. Only 4 for them as well. And it came down to a Ramos own goal for them in the 76th minute to win it 1-0. So tough break for us. Tough break for Ramos getting an own goal in Barcelona's 36,000 seat stadium or whatever they're at right now. I don't even remember what it's called, but anyway, next up, the other very exciting match. We had 2 really, really good matches of these 7s, and then this one was it. The well, I guess the Rio match too was, we'll talk about that in a minute, but the PSV match 2-2 is how it finished in the second match of the group stage of the Champions League. Sevilla traveled up to Eindhoven, playing PSV. 2-2 was the final. Really lucky to get out of there with a draw, to be honest. I mean, PSV was on fire and just 26, I think I'm reading that right, 26 total shots from PSV, 8 on target. It seems like we were constantly getting berated with shots. Really, really good performance from them. But, you know, we score first. We score in the 68th minute. Gudeli, or Gudel, as I need to start pronouncing, I guess. Gudel scored first. That came off of a, what was that, a novice cross to Ramos on the back post. Who heads it back, and Gudel just attacked it and just volleyed it right into the back of the net. Just a gorgeous, gorgeous goal. Just what instinct for him to actually go for that. But prior to that, Sevilla thought they had scored the first goal. I thought they scored the first goal. I think if you'd have showed this to anybody else in the world that wasn't a PSV fan or the two refs in charge of VAR and on the field, was a good goal. And that was the Pedrosa goal to open it up, where it was called back for a handball. Just setting that up a little bit for you if you didn't get to see the highlight of that. Pedrosa being very aggressive, blocks a pass. It was basically a clearance from the defender, Romalu, I think, so the defender for PSV. And it kind of like hits his, it does hit Pedrosa's hand. But Pedrosa's got his arms to his body, like, not extended at all, like, as tight to your body as you can get. It grazes his hand, advances forward, Pedrosa jumps on it, scores. Sevilla should be up 1-0. For whatever reason, VAR says, hey, that's a handball. Waved off, and that's it. It didn't count. So I thought it was terrible. I don't know if you guys it's all the same. I don't think I've ever been mad at a VAR decision like that one.
I wasn't even mad about it. I was confused. Now I'm a little bit upset about it. Now that you've had a couple of weeks to process it, but in the moment, it was just a head scratcher. That was the time where I realized that maybe I don't understand these handball rules enough. I thought I'd do them, but what's a handball and what context is it? Because if this were on the other end of the field, and we have a handball, a defender gets in front of the ball and it hits his hand there, that hasn't been called, at least consistently, it hasn't been called a handball.
If the hand's close to the body,
I honestly had to second guess myself and start gaslighting myself. Wait, do I really know this? Am I not as knowledgeable about this as I thought? Is there a different context? If he hits the ball and then it goes to himself and then it's on the attacking side, are there different rules that govern different parts of the pitch? I was just going through all of these iterations in my mind, and I just got it's a good thing because it allowed me to not get angry at it. But it was just such a head scratcher. I don't understand it.
Literally Pedrosa had to cut off his hand not to be that, there's nothing else he could have done there. So it wasn't I don't understand. I'm still confused. I don't know that anybody said it was a proper explanation. The U.S. announcers here speaking in English on the feed, oh, yeah, that's a handball. Clearly, it touched his hand, blah, blah, blah. But, dude, what is he supposed to do? Armless the rest of his life and not get a handball? It doesn't make any sense. Eddie, did you see it? You know what we're talking about? Your thoughts, are you the same?
It's tough.
What are we missing?
Touch. I guess they determined it whether that the hand was used to control the ball, because it hit his hand, then his thigh. And then it went, but for me, his hand was really close to the body, so perhaps it shouldn't really have been considered a handball, unless it's one of those rules where the hand was used to score a goal.
The hand of God kind of thing.
Yeah, it didn't directly lead to the goal, but I could see why they would have chalked it off. But what was more of a handball, that one or Fernando against Roma?
Huh.
I don't mean to reopen that, but that can of worms.
Probably Roma, honestly.
But I mean, he was so
Neither one of them was probably. I don't know. The two of them in a vacuum, I would say Fernando against Roma was more of a handball than this.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I get that's a good question, but.
But I mean, if this.
And they were probably just, it was the first goal in the game. They were let's just take it off the board and let them fight for it the rest of the way, maybe is what they're thinking. But, of course, Sevilla Twitter has a whole different theory if you go onto fan sites of Twitter and how it's a conspiracy against Sevilla because this is an Italian ref and we knocked out Juventus and we took the title away from Roma. It's a whole thing on Sevilla. Yeah, it's a whole thing on Sevilla Twitter, man. It's always a conspiracy. Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. Anyway, I thought it was hilarious when I started reading that. I was like, guys, come on, really? Anyway, I don't even know if the VAR... I think the VAR ref was Italian too, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
Come on.
Back to the PSV game, which was very entertaining. It was really very nerve-wracking because PSV was such an attack and on the ball all the time. Anyway, Sevilla did open the scoring with the Goodell strike. But then the ref intervened again and called a penalty on Ramos. Tillman in the box goes down in the 83rd minute. Ramos called for the trip. There was contact. I thought it was a penalty at first, too. I didn't see any problem with it. Replays show that Tillman was kind of falling down prior to the contact. I can see it going either way. I wasn't mad at it. Yeah. It was what it was, right? Ramos was in not great defending position there, so... he left it up to the ref to make the decision. He did. Our old friend Luke DeJong steps up from the spot, ties the game up 1-1. And then, a minute later, our friend Enesri, our best player of the season so far, Enesri, of my opinion, best player. I mean, you got to say that. 5 goals overall, he's got to be your best player, I think. But more than that, Wan Lu delivered the cross, perfectly timed cross, perfectly timed jump from Enesri to put Sevilla back in the lead 2-1. I'm thinking, all right, we're looking good on the road. Maybe we'll get this victory. Ugh. And then also in the 89th minute, Luca Bacchio hit the post on a breakaway. So it was like, we're so close. But then 5 minutes of extra time. For some reason, Sergio Ramos decides to foul on the sideline. No chance of really doing anything with the ball, but he fouls, sets up a free kick, and Nyland gets beat with, right near post from Jordan Tays. Tese, right? Is that how you say his name? Anyway, tie game, last kick of the game, 2-2. Sevilla is now third in the table, 2 points, 2 behind Linz, who's sitting in first, and 1 behind Arsenal. So the group's for anybody, right? It's wide open in that group. It's a shame we couldn't pull out the victory here, but it's still wide open. So you gotta feel okay if you're Sevilla here and the new boss coming in. Oops, I teased something.
Spoiler.
Spoiler alert. Now you got to stick around and listen to the rest of this podcast. So, anything on the PSV game did you want to talk about there, Eddie? Or did I summarize it pretty good? I know you wanted to talk about that one earlier.
That's about it. It was nice seeing Wan Lu getting that cross. Almost Navas-like to find a striker there with the header. I like that we hit them back right after they scored as well. I think it was something like it was seconds. It was like the replay
less than a minute
from the kickoff, right? So I love goals like that. I just feel like we could have held on, and I know all fingers were pointing at Ramos because he was at fault for both goals. You could say he had a part to play in both goals conceded, especially after setting up the first one. It's for us, it was a bitter pill to swallow, but the man that was brought in to fix our defense, or to at least improve it, kind of got in the way of an important result in the Champions League, and it was one of those games where you know you're a Sevilla fan because they just make you care so much. Like I was already thinking about the Arsenal game when we're just, you know, great time wasting, especially when Acuna's on the pitch because he's a master at that. I thought we were headed home with the 3 points, and then that set piece at the end, 2-2. It was tough because Lons was doing the business to Arsenal and got that win. So us getting the win would have made that match against the Gunners easier, but we just got to do it ourselves. You know, we can't rely on other teams to do the business for us. So yeah, it's going to be tough, but Sevilla hasta la muerte, nunca se rinde. Anything could happen at the Pichuan, but we'll see when that time comes, because
we're so used to being on the positive of that result, right? Like, we're so used to being on that, like, scoring at the end. Like, it sucks even, it's even harder when it happens to us that way. Speaking of scoring at the end, Sevilla played Rayo Vallecano. It was the last game we played in La Liga, and the first half was just it was shit. Let's just be honest, it was shit. Pure and utter crap, caca, whatever you want to say, all the good words. Sevilla goes down 2-0 early. Rayo, Valentin scored in the 21st minute for them, followed by Rivera, Alvaro Rivera in the 26th. Shortly after that, Mendilibar pulls Fernando, the captain, because Rakitic and Navas both are on the bench. So Fernando took the captain ban and substituted the veteran out right after that, who wasn't happy at all coming to the sideline. Gave the Mutombo wag of the finger several times to both the manager and as he was walking down the pitch, didn't even go to the bench. He actually went right to the clubhouse. Very, very pissed off there, Fernando. So not a good look from him. Not a good look from hang on. So yeah, not a good look from Mendy there, but or Fernando for that matter. To Mendy's credit, we started playing better right after that, and Sevilla comes out the second half. So gets on the board with his first goal in the 50th minute with a really cool curling shot from just outside the box, and then I don't know, chances there, but. Nothing really happened until the very end to set it up nicely from what we were talking about earlier. Enesri with the head again. It's always this guy, right, with the head. I love it. Getting his fifth goal of the year in all competitions from a Rakitic corner. Rakitic's second assist on the season. Basically, him and Wanlu are tied in assists on two, which is kind of cool to see the young Wanlu up there at the top of the assist leaders from this team. So, you know, Sevilla pulls it out at the very end. Really, really well-timed header. Nealon had come up for that. I think a lot of people thought Nealon might have got that header, but it was in Ezri. And I made the tweet right after the game. I said, you know, Enesri with the winner, was it also a job saver from Mendilibar? Was my comment. To answer that, no. Nope. I thought it was. I thought at the time it was probably safe, but anyway. Guys, Rio game, anything stuck out? I know you guys missed part of it, but all the drama that unfolded there with Mendilibar and Fernando, unfortunate, and seems to be the end of Mendilibar there. That's, I guess, what took him out. 62 years old, Mendilibar, 30 matches with Sevilla. He averaged 1.47 points per match while he was at Sevilla. And he sacked on Sunday. Sunday the 8th of October. Two wins out of 10 in all competitions. You know, it had to be a tough decision, right? Like, had to be a tough decision for the, you know, after winning the Europa League. But you could just tell that the team, especially with the drama, I think, on Sunday, just, or Saturday, sorry, the drama with the game on Saturday just kind of put everything in perspective and said, all right, maybe some things need to change. Mendilibar did say after the game, I leave friends at the club and I leave friends in Sevilla that I will always consider as my home. I am also proud after the night in Budapest. To become a small part of the history of this great club. I will always tell you, and I will always carry you in my heart. So really kind words from Mendilibar, and I hope he did a somersault while he was leaving the building. Anyway, guys, what are your thoughts? Like, did you think that's the right move from Sevilla? Steve, we'll start with you. What do you think?
I don't know if it's the right move. I got into some conversations about this, both on our forums and on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling Elon's website these days. Quite frankly, I don't know if it's right. It's tough. Two wins out of 10 is not good enough. It's not good enough to cut it. And the club obviously felt the same way. We're behind where we were at this point last year, which is surprising. But even even then, things felt like we were moving in the right direction in a way that we did not feel last year at this time. At the same time, I don't know if it's the right thing. I do applaud the club in making the decision when they made it. They obviously felt that it was time to move on, and they didn't waste time. We were talking a little bit beforehand. Eddie, you brought up how painful it was to watch those last couple of Lopetegui games last year when we all knew that he was going to get sacked. And we were just kind of going through the motions, and it felt like wasted time every time we took the pitch when he was on the touchline. So the fact that they made the call almost immediately after that international break started, we've got a couple of weeks we can get in here. We've kind of got two games that are relatively like throwaway games for this new manager. The expectations aren't going to be super high going against Real Madrid or going against Arsenal. So it's kind of hard to throw him to the wolves with these two hard teams, but also like they're not going to expect him to go out and get 3 points from each of these games. And then he's got Akadi coming up right after that Arsenal game. So I feel like he's got some time to work on his plan and kind of instill his game plan with these players, and I'm excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, Eddie, what are your thoughts?
I don't really know anymore, because when we sacked Lopetegui for Sampaoli last season, it was hard not to see what he did for us in the past, so I was filled up with a lot of that. The whole Nasri, Zonzi pairing in midfield, you know, the first years of seeing Ben Yedder, Sarabia, all that good stuff, Jovetic in January. So good memories. Maybe that didn't tail off really well at the end, but it wasn't really that great of a stint. We got the whole Jordan meme out of that. You know, reading the paper at the Camp Nou. But the Mendilibar sacking, I guess it had to happen, because the results, the first three games, we lost the first three games. So the fact that we started the season this way, you could tell that, okay, things are not going as planned. We did not see that coming, considering that we actually addressed some issues in the summer, perhaps not enough, but it's not the same team from last year. Still similar, since he was still playing some of the same guys. But I guess he pretty much was on a chopping block at the start of last international break. I guess that if things didn't improve, then a decision would be made this time around. So we only got those wins against Las Palmas and Almeria. Sure, match away to Barcelona is tough, but the other matches, the lack of clean sheets, I guess, and perhaps I guess this is the style of play that's not really clicking, because it still feels lethargic and same old stuff with Sevilla. Where's the direction? Only playing one good half of football. Except for that Almeria game. I guess that was the first time we had a real complete game from this team. But I don't think the sacking is too early. Perhaps it's right on time. Perhaps you get a manager that Horta wanted in Diego Alonso. I'll say right now I don't know anything about him. I haven't watched much football for the last couple years to know how well he did with Uruguay. Knowing that they had it was hard to replace the Tabárez, who was there for many, many years, and they had an aging, you know, changing of the guard with Luis Suarez and Cavani, so he had tough decisions to make there. So how would that correlate to the decisions he will have to make here with the old guard? Hopefully it doesn't lead to, you know, substituting your captain in the first half. but will he play the new guys right from the off? Will he have a consistent starting 11, which I'm seeing some people having issues with how Jose Luis had to start this season. Maybe some more consistency there, because I'm sure we all want to see more of Sumare. Perhaps not whenever we see Sol being benched or not starting. Why is that the case still? I mean, I'm glad we're going with a new name, and not the rehashed Spanish managers that get linked to us whenever we'd made a sack in last season, Gracia or Marcelino. I know we're linked with Iraola, but he's at a job right now at Bournemouth. So yeah, I'm glad we're going with something fresh. I know it's a risk; it will be his first job in Europe. So we'll see how that goes. I'm pretty neutral on this because I have no idea what to expect. So I know we have some good pieces to play with here. So hopefully it goes in the right direction.
Uruguay. And having to make that transition, from what I read about the new guy, is, you know, he did that and winning 4 straight games to get into the World Cup, bringing in some of the new players, younger players, to kind of rejuvenate that squad. It'll be interesting to see if he can do some of the same here, because we do have an aging squad that needs some kick in the butt, if you will. It's going to be interesting to see how he plays that. You mentioned all the subs the rotations by Mendilibar. I think I heard on the Rayo game, 28 different players for Sevilla this year used, the most in La Liga. So this kind of seemed a little unnecessary on some of the rotation that he was doing. I don't know if he was, you know, trying to play the long game, but you got to win the short game instead of playing for that long game. I asked some of the guys on the interwebs and on Monty's Men especially what their thoughts are about the sacking of Mendilibar. And I've got one here from Pac-Man on the forums. Pac-Man's from Utah. He says, "The sacking of Mendilibar is unexpected, as I thought it might not be a bad idea to ride out to the off season to have a better chance of getting someone great, but it's not unwarranted. Mindy's record speaks for itself. He's struggling underwater, and it seems like the end of last season's bump was just that, a bump. The quality in this squad is too much not to take advantage, or not to be at least in competition with the European spots, and we need to take advantage of that. I just hope we can find the right guy to do it." That was prior to the announcement. We also have some comments from Ryan Moore from Virginia here.
Hey there, Sevillistas Worldwide. This is Ryan Moore calling from a lake outside Washington, D.C. here, fishing with the kids. Thankfully, thinking of other things other than Sevilla having to sack its third coach in just over a year. But here's my sort of take on the thing. I think, you know, the timing was right, necessary, and always better to sort of speed things up over an international break, give a little bit of a breathing room. There's nothing to be said. I definitely think you needed to give Mendilibar the opportunity to show his class after what he did last season. And, you know, I think he's one of those coaches that's just, if he's comes into a situation up against the ropes as he always has, you know, in the previous all the teams he's been, always, you know, in relegation battles and whatnot, somehow is able to make the magic happen just enough to squeeze by. But you know, this season for whatever reason just hasn't gone his way. You know, who knows who we're gonna get. I really hope we don't get Marcelino again. No good memories from that period of Sevilla. So crossing our fingers so that Gallardo can find conditions that'll make him come along, but unclear whether or not we've got the kind of cash to attract somebody who's, obviously he's got a resume right now that is very attractive and very hard to, you know, get him to sign on unless you're willing to pay the bills. So. Anyhow, Vamos mi Sevilla, and looking forward to another turnaround season, maybe our eighth Europa League. Heck, you know, maybe make some magic happen and actually make it out of the group in Champions League. So thanks for pulling this podcast together all the time. We all appreciate it and have a lot of fun with it. So take care. Have a good night.
And here's Manuel Munoz Romero, also from Virginia.
I was saying that the best option to me was Marcelino because, I mean, he's a solid coach, you know, knows La Liga, knows Sevilla because he won Sevilla like several years ago. And I was also saying about, like, you know, talking about the requirements that he was like giving Sevilla for him to sign, you know, like the first is like a solid or like a long, like 2 or 3 years, and then plenty autonomy and freedom to conduct all the signings and stuff. And, you know, to that I said that, you know, it makes total sense. It's a reasonable request. And it could have been done since, you know, Monchi is off the table. He always wanted to, you know, like be on top of everything. But now that we know that none of that happened, and now we have a Diego Alonso, well, I mean, I was surprised. And like I say, I mean, I don't know about like anything anymore. This board is very erratic, you know, it's completely unexpected, you know, what they did, but apparently it's something that Victor Horta wanted to do, and he went ahead and do it. I don't know. Anyway, best of luck to him, and he's in Sevilla, so he's the best. That's the idea. Anyway, man, all right, let's talk soon, okay? Bye now.
I reached out to our guys in Mexico that we met in the summer to see if they had any opinions. And Antonio from the Mexican Peña chimed in here with his thoughts.
Hi, Chris and company. Well, in my opinion, the dismissal of Mendilibar, it's not going to fix anything. I mean, some players don't play with all the effort that they should put on the pitch. And like when we play against Valencia, but the second team, there were really young players and former players. But these guys play with all their soul and all the force that they have. So that's how they took us by surprise. So I, in my perspective, we need a change. The president, all the administration of the club, needs to clean up, because the problem, it's starting to be in the center, in the heart of Sevilla. So that's my opinion. Anything is gonna change, even if we bring Guardiola, if we bring Ancelotti or Arteta or whatever other coaches that we can bring, anything is gonna change, because the problem, it's in the heart of Sevilla, like the president, the administration, all the troubles with all the like the investors and all that stuff. So that's my opinion. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I see some players that they don't play with all their effort, with all the soul and everything that they need to put on the pitch.
Today, we're recording this on, what is it, Tuesday night, 10:10. Woke up this morning with the announcement that Sevilla had made the hire for Diego Alonso, the Uruguayan that played some games in La Liga. 48-year-old. He's only contracted through the end of through the end of the season. So I thought that was kind of strange.
He doesn't have an option of a plus one option, or
I haven't read that. Maybe I haven't seen him personally.
I'm not sure on what the official thing said. I thought it was just still the reporting that was saying the option, but I'm not sure what he has officially. But yeah, but my understanding as well is still till the end of the season.
He's got a 44.9% win percentage. He played 66 matches in La Liga, scoring 9 goals, 6 with Malaga, 1 with Racing Santander, and 2 with Valencia. So he was around La Liga a little bit. He started his managerial career at Bella Vista, where I said he was, you know, bouncing around those whatever sides of the Paraguayan Primera Division before he landed the job in Mexico in 2014 with Pachuca. With Pachuca, he won the 2016 Liga Mexico Torino Clausura. He finished second in the table that year, but the Mexican leagues have a playoff, and he actually knocked off the number one team, Monterrey, that year. In the table, he had 8 wins, 6 draws, and 3 losses, but took down Monterrey 1-2 in the finals. And then he also won the 2016 CONCACAF. I don't know. I'm sitting here reading it like it's a word. It's good. You know, it's jeez. And I live here. What the heck, man? I should know this. CONCACAF Champions League. So the 2016 CONCACAF Champions League, he won, beating Tigres in the finals, another Mexican team. Then he left for Monterrey in 2018. He became the first manager to win win the CONCACAF Champions League with 2 different teams. The first guy to do that. While he was in Monterrey, he knocked off Tigres again to win that one. So Tigres probably can't like this guy very well, right? Like, he's like, whatever. But he was fired in September 2019. And then he found a spot in MLS. New club, Inter Miami, came into play in 2019. Was Beckham's first hire there. It's Beckham owns Inter Miami. Partly owns Inter Miami, whatever. Anyway, so for the first club there, he didn't last too long there. Beckham sacked him to go with Phil Neville. Then 2021, that's when he was appointed the Uruguayan national team, replacing Tabarez. I was always afraid watching those games when Tabarez was there. I thought he was gonna die on the. He was so old. But I mean, to come in and replace a legend like that is always tough. You saw it like with Emery, right? Like Emery came in to Arsenal and tried to replace
Wenger.
Wenger. And then who was the guy that took over Man U after?
Moyes after Ferguson.
After Ferguson. I mean, it's always tough to come in after that. But he came in, had really good success early on, and got him into the Qatarian World Cup. Crashed out pretty soon after that. Mm. I did find out, so he does have a tie to Sevilla. His uncle, Daniel Alonso, played 12 matches with Sevilla in the 75 and 76 seasons.
I thought that name sounded familiar.
Yeah, right? 4 years before I was born. Yeah, I remember that guy. But anyway, he does have a tie. I thought it was cool. I'm sure some of our guys out there know. Looking at you, Brian and Tim, maybe.
Those of us with a little bit of gray in our beards, yeah.
Hey, I have a couple gray hairs. Not on my head, though, yet. I'm staying proud for that. I reached out to the Mexican guys again just to kind of see if they could shine a light on this guy, and they really didn't have a ton to say. The only thing I got really was from Irving Vega, who's in the Mexican Peña, and he said he had a good time at Pachuca, and he thinks with the current players at Sevilla that this manager will be able to work within his tactics to best utilize those players. And that kind of goes to what Enrico on the Monchi's Men forums said too. I guess he listened to the press conference today. I my Spanish is not good enough to like do an on the fly translation like that. So luckily he was listening for us, and he had this to say. He said the system, even though he's known for a 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1, is irrelevant. This is what Alonso says. What matters more to him is getting in positions that the players can use their strengths and are comfortable to create game-winning moments. He He likes the aggressive approach and high-temperature football. To be dominant and try to prove quick combinations is the best way forward. Realistically, he says everybody wants that. The more motivating part and connecting to the group is the more intimate part. So basically getting to know the players. And I did read a story in one of the pressers. I forgot who actually put it out, but basically of the guy showing, Alonso showing up to a player for the Uruguayan national team and spending like the whole day just at his house, like talking football, like, hey, trying to explain like what he was expecting out of him. And it just said, the Uruguayan player said it just made you want to like work harder and be motivated. So he seems to be a very hard worker and player minded. So let's see. I think it's the consensus on Twitter and Monty's man was like, who's this guy? Like, a lot of people didn't know very much about him, and it came out of left field. He wasn't on any of the rumor posts. You know, nobody knew. So it was kind of intriguing to see that that signing this morning. So, guys, any thoughts on the new Jefe, other than what we've already said?
Like what Eddie said, I'm just really excited about it. I don't know anything about him. It's fresh. It's not somebody that we've been linked to, or, you know, every struggling Spanish club has been linked to over the last 4 or 5 years. So who knows what we're going to see. And I don't know. It's kind of like opening a present on Christmas morning. You don't know what you're going to get, but hopefully you like it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's the consensus among all the fans. Is it's nobody wanted a retread, right? Like, nobody wanted somebody that you see on the sidelines of La Liga all the time, and me included. I didn't want to see that. So it's good to see.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of work ahead. You mentioned the upcoming fixtures with Real Madrid and Arsenal.
Yeah.
Right after that, you got Cadiz, Celta Vigo, both bottom-tier teams that we're fighting with, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
We need those games. We got to take those. Followed up with Arsenal and then Real Betis, the derby. So his plate is full. It's going to be a challenge. Hopefully the team. I mean, they already had a training session today with him, so they're hitting the ground running. Hopefully they can do some good things, because. I think Pacman said it, you know, best. You know, we've got some talent on this team that's just underperforming. You also heard it in Antonio's message from the Mexican Pena. Like, some of the players might not be working as hard as they could, and maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just trying to find that motivation needed to compete all the time. And you see that, like, how he bounced from scoring 5 goals against Almeria to, you know, can't even show up in the first half of Rio at home. Like, it's just so weird with this team, why there's such a disconnect between games and why we're not showing up. So anyway, huge challenge.
Just to highlight real quick, I'm totally not biased here, but Luke Bacchio won player of the month for Sevilla. I'm not sure if, like, there probably was a league player of the month, but I don't know who that was, nor do I care. It should have been Luke Bacchio. But, he's making a real positive contribution to this team. I just hope it creates some positive chemistry, because I hope they start sharing the ball more, like, namely between him and Ocampos and Lamela. They're all capable of doing some good work, especially in that game against Barcelona where that was the front three. There are some good combinations there. It's just that it's a bit bittersweet, because I know we're not going to see them as mainly as a front three, because we're definitely going to incorporate Yen somehow, either Yen, Rafa, or Mariano. But just seeing those guys together, it just kind of shows the kinds of players that we need at this team to make the attack click. I also wanted to highlight Sergio Ramos, because I feel like the contribution has been positive, overall slightly positive, but to our own detriment because crucial mistakes. I mean, the Barcelona own goal, it happens. There's no avoiding that. But the game away at PSV, I just feel like that's always going to be part of him now. He might panic at some point when it gets too much. Perhaps it's because of the players ahead of him, or there's not enough protection in front of him for him to having to make those rash decisions. But for him to, you know, kind of toe the line there and try to be overly aggressive, going to ground too early, or going to ground at all in the box, which I don't think defenders should do in first place, to lead to those, you know, crucial errors. But we'll see. I think it's a signing we needed, I'll admit. But hopefully it doesn't get worse. I still believe that everything will be better once Marcao comes back. I still have faith in my man. If Marcao comes back, we will be a different Sevilla. I still have faith in the guy. I know it's a joke now. He was supposed to come 7 days. He was only supposed to be out for 7 days. It's just a little niggling injury that's kept him out for 3 months. I still have faith in the man. It might still be a bit of Diego Carlos in him, where he's going to, you know, have some of those Ramos-like fouls. But he will change the look of the defense. He has such a presence about him that it's like that's the guy that's needed, yeah. Alongside Bade. But it's going to come to that. Hopefully Soumaré gets to get some minutes, you know, to finally get the torch passed on to him from Fernando. But it's still a work in progress.
Marcao made an appearance in this last in the Rayo game. He actually got off the bench
onto the pitch
right around the time on the sideline. Sorry, on the sideline, he was dressed.
Do you have crutches?
It almost looked like he was coming into the match. Like it was really weird, and I'm still not sure like why what he was doing. It was near the second goal from Rayo. And I thought he was just arguing, like, with the ref or something, like, up near Mendilibar. Enrico from the boards was saying that he thought that he was preparing to come on as a sub. So he did make kind of a, like, cameo there. He made TV. Let's put it that way. He made the TV. So maybe he's closer to coming back than what we thought. Let's hope so.
I'm hopeful, man. Yeah, that's the guy.
I think so too. I really liked what we saw from him earlier when he was fit, the very few times that he was fit. But he just seems kind of the Diego Carlos that we needed, the muscle back there, you know, mm-hmm. the meat and the potatoes, if you will, of the defense of what we need. Yeah, that's a good shout-out. Juan Lu also made Player of the Month, I think, for SofaScore and their, like, Player of the Month thing. Been playing really well. What do you guys think about Pedrosa's play on the left-hand side, left back? What do you think about him?
Did you want to chime in on this one, Steve? Because he was kind of at the front of my mind as well. But I was going to wait a while.
No, yeah, go ahead. I want to put my thoughts together here.
I feel like he's a bit weak defensively. A bit meaning a lot. Especially those 1v1 situations. Not to say Acuña is infinitely better, but I feel like Acuña holds his own better than Pedrosa does. When Pedrosa is 1v1, I feel like it's a wash. Like, the player's getting by him no matter what. And who's there to back him up? It's Ramos. And sometimes it could spell disaster, but Ramos has been playing well in some of those games that he would step in at the right moment, or the defense, or either him or Bade would, right? So the other problem with that is Luke Bacchio. As well as he's been playing, I feel like he's a little bit, you know, he struggles a bit with getting back. So Pedrosa, you know, with the age of attacking fullbacks, right, you're going to need your winger to come back as well. So Luke Bacchio doesn't do a good enough job in coming back, leaving Pedrosa exposed. especially that Barcelona game when Cancelo and Yamal were just wreaking havoc on the right side. I mean, thankfully Yamal didn't have that great of a first half, but in that second half, that's when it started to click with him, and then Cancelo was having a really good game. When João Félix hit the post, that was a ball from Cancelo that split two defenders there to feed Félix, and then thankfully it hit the bar. But it could spell disaster in other games, but those are just things that I've seen. As good as he's been going forward, Pedrosa, defensively I'm a bit skeptical, but maybe he's still trying to come back to full fitness. He's probably a bit, you know, more restraint, that doesn't want to get injured, you know, going to the challenge and stuff. So I'll give him time with that.
You got to watch the Rayo game.
I mean, I...
And is that a good way?
No, I was talking to Eddie. Like, go back and watch the Rayo game and just...
Are we gonna change our opinion?
No, I'm just... In comparison to Acuna, like... I mean, we all know Acuna can play really well at that position. I don't think he's back yet. And maybe if he does get back to his fitness level, then it's a different discussion. Yeah. But, I mean, Pedrosa was critical, I think, to that comeback in the second half. And Acuna, as I showed you guys the first before the match, I mean, he totally got ate up on that play that caused the second goal. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe we're seeing – maybe Acuna comes back when he gets fully fit. But right now, he's not the same player. So, I think we're a little exposed there. And maybe Pedrosa needs to play a little more wingish instead of defense.
That's where I like him, too. Like, Eddie, you mentioned, like, he's weak defensively. And he is, but he's very exciting when he goes forward. He creates a lot of chances there. And if this were last year, I think that would be much more of a problem. But our defense as a whole is a lot stronger than it was at this point last year. I would say, like, our center back situation is a lot better than it was. I'm more comfortable with him going forward this year. He's definitely still, like, second choice to Acuna, I think, especially in that defensive the role that you would expect a left back to play. But I will say, like, overall, I feel like he is an improvement over Tellez last year. I feel like as a player, the whole package, what he brings, is a definite improvement over what we saw out of Alex Tellez last year, who seemed a little bit more one-dimensional, or not as many dimensional as Pedrosa.
What might be interesting if we do end up running a 4-4-2, if he could play that left
mid there?
Like left mid attack. Yeah. You know, like him and Acuna on that side, and then put Luca Bacchio with a Yen up top. I mean, that might be dangerous. That might be dangerous.
Interesting.
But then you got other players that could play there too. But
I feel like almost every one of the players that we signed this offseason, we can slot in, and we can make use of in multiple ways, like in the positions that they play. Like it feels like they're more dynamic than last year, and it just feels more exciting. I don't know if I'm just like got rose tinted glasses on right now, but like it feels like
we have exciting players. Yeah, no, it feels you're exactly
so
right.
Much more
we have exciting.
There's so much more to that can happen. It's not like just they don't just do one thing.
We got younger. Let's be honest. We got a little younger. We got a little faster. With Luca Bacchio and So and
Pedrosa.
And Pedrosa. I mean, Pedrosa's super quick.
It feels like,
and then Wanlu too. Yeah. Like Wanlu bringing the energy as well. So, I mean, Wanlu was brilliant in that Rayo game. Like in the second half, and Navas came on, and Navas actually, I don't know. I mean, Navas didn't look great when he came on. So,
God forbid, a guy that is approaching 40 has some games where he slows down, right? Like, I mean, it's like, it's going to happen.
Yeah,
it's going to happen.
I mean,
it's a Time just keeps, you know, ticking. So,
yeah,
at some point we're gonna have to move on from him.
Yeah. Speaking of moving on, I think we need to wrap this one up because I know we're over an hour long and people are going to be like, what? We might have to split this in two episodes. But I think we're at a point in this. It's very strange. Like, here we are a year later and we're almost in the same exact position. And with managers is what I'm trying to say. And but it seems a little different this time because there is an unknown to this guy, right? Like, nobody knows him. Nobody knows what he can do. And I'm hoping that he can take a step back and look at our players and see what we have, be able to push past his, ingrained thoughts of what a player is and what he can be. You know, like, I think Mendilibar had that a little bit. Like, he didn't want to change. I'm hoping this guy can get away from all that old school thinking and bring some new life into this club, because it's needed, and we've known it for years that we needed to revamp and get younger top down. We need youth in everywhere. And maybe we are seeing that with, Del Nido Jr. coming and getting higher standing within this club, bringing some youth and different ideas. I don't know. And Orta, too. I mean, Orta's not very old as well. So hopefully it's starting from the inside out. Guys, going into the international break, new manager, old manager out. The team coming off a loss. Well, a tie that felt like a loss, but... well, not really. I don't know. It was a weird feeling on that Rayo match. Just coming from behind at the end and it's still draw. But whatever I'm trying to say. It's late here on the East Coast after midnight. So until next time, folks. Vamos, mi Sevilla.
Vamos, campeón.
Y nunca te rindas.